The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it. The weekend edition is here. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Colton Stone, Ethan, gang is all here. You heard Dean Wormer a minute ago, somebody putting their foot down. Someone did earlier this week, as Nebraska has been a national talking point. First for the Northern Illinois loss, next for the dismissal of Sean Eichhorst. Welcome in, Rutgers. Come on down. We'll talk about Nebraska and the Scarlet Knights. We'll hit on Coach Riley, his team, and what lies ahead. You're welcome to Tap the Line, Shillingbridge, Cork, and Tap House, 466-3776, 466-3776, toll-free 800-825-5865. Can catch us on the ESPN Lincoln app. Assuming we put a couple quarters in that machine and it's working, let's get to it. Our rewind coming up in 15 minutes with former Nebraska assistant. He's been in the Big Ten the last 10 years, and now at Rutgers as co-defensive coordinator. A blast from the past, Bill Bush, going to be with us. Our conversation with him. In 1 hour, we'll run down Brandon Vogel of Hail Varsity, and then the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, will join the program. Perhaps a visit towards the end of the program for a man. It's this important. This Saturday is this important that Klausburn may be maybe here to observe, support, and cheer on Nebraska over Rutgers. We welcome in Mr. Mark Kranak. Mark, how's your week been, brother? What do you know?
It has been busy, man. It's been busy. It's been full of internet searches. How about yours?
You know,
because you naturally just, as soon as you hear the news, you start, okay, well, who's next? Oh, I'll Google it, and then we'll figure it out.
Yep.
I'm doing searches like Hank Bounds.
Is that what search firms are doing? Do they just Google? Do they just Google possible dot 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 ADs dot dot dot? Is that how it works? Is that what their 100G gets them?
Well, I'm doing investigations like Hank Bounds, Dan Mullen. Do they have a relationship?
Yeah.
I couldn't find anything, but maybe they do. There's no documentation.
There's similarities and their difference. One got out of Mississippi, the other once out of Mississippi.
You know, so yeah, just stuff like that. What a week. What a week. And you know what? It depends on who the next guy is, because it's careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I think Hank Bounds and Ronnie Green had so many damn it, Sean moments. You know, I think that's really what it comes down to. Like, damn it, Sean, would you just handle this?
That's an amazing way to put it.
They're just like,
and you
damn
know,
damn it.
And there's been some nice work, Sean, moments too.
Of course.
But you remember the damn it moments. You sound like a parrot. I love you. You sound like a straight-up parrot. Damn it, Carson.
You know, but look, Hank Bounds has to run an entire university system. Nebraska Kearney, UNO, University of Nebraska Lincoln. He's trying to get enrollment up. They're losing $30 million in funding or whatever it is from the state with the budget shortfall. He's got stuff to do. He's got a lot of stuff to do. He does not need to be hearing from Grandma in Ord pissed off about Black Friday. That's entirely avoidable, right? Like, it's entirely avoidable.
And then he gets the same phone call, even more worked up about Northern Illinois.
Right? So, I mean, it's things like that. And same with Ronnie Green. You know, he has to run the entire campus. Like, I think they saw over time, like, my God, we are spending an inordinate amount of time on things that are basically just communication snafus. You know what I mean? Like, the guy's just not communicating well. Starting with the hire of Mike Riley, even. Now, yeah. That predates some of those guys, obviously. But I don't know. It's just I can see where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And look, Hail Varsity put up a poll that day. And I don't think we're a bloodthirsty fan base. I got a little bit of that, but I don't think we're terribly bloodthirsty.
I think you're a wore-out fan base, starved right. for results at a high, high level. You're just yep. sick of not being important.
Hail Varsity put up a poll. Do you agree with the firing? And it's not scientific, obviously. But it had a good 1,500 responses mm-hmm. in about, I don't know, 5 hours. And 88% of people were like, yep. We agree with that firing. Maybe everybody's colored by the Northern Illinois loss, and that's why they're saying yes. But regardless, that is an overwhelming amount of people.
You wanted like, yeah, you wanted get the suit out of here. You wanted some sort of sacrifice after Northern Illinois, too.
Well, I was calling for it during the game. Like, do we have to sacrifice a goat? What's going on? What do you do?
Go get Serrano the live chicken.
Somebody. Sacrifice something. Well, and look, the way Sean responded after that loss was just, it was unbelievable.
Out of character. It's out of character for him.
Oh, completely out of character. And I think the number one thing, if I'm Hank Bounds or Ronnie Green, I am not. I'm not even close. If I am, the line that pisses me off the most from his impromptu press conference is where he talks about showing strong leadership. Mm-hmm. Like he literally said during the press conference, well, I'm here, I'm showing strong leadership. Oh, is that what you're doing? If you're showing strong leadership, number one, you're definitely not talking about how you're showing strong leadership. Like that's number one.
It's evident by itself.
But right. You just show strong leadership. You don't talk about how you are showing strong leadership. It's like a car dealership saying, we plan to increase our revenue with a new sale. Right? Like, leave out the whole you're increasing your revenue part. That's irrelevant to everybody else. Right? Just talk about how you're going to discount cars. Right? Don't talk about how you were. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable what he said. It was surreal. The entire Saturday was surreal. I did not think this would happen, though. I mean, who among us were like, well, Sean's fired this week? I mean, nobody thought that, right?
No, so it says something. Most of the thought was if you don't rebound from Northern Illinois and things go bad today, then something happens Monday.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, everybody was on notice after mm-hmm. Saturday. Hey, and it's still like that. Look, sadly. You know, you come out lay an egg against Rutgers today. Yeah. But you look at what Riley's got stacked against him, too. Mm-hmm. This isn't to make excuses for the guy. I don't know if he's the right guy. I think we all want him to be. I mean, who doesn't want that guy to succeed? You're sort of a bad human being if you don't.
Well put.
Right? Great human being. Damn it, I hope he gets it right. He does have it stacked against him. There are like, is it 10 scholarship seniors, maybe 8? We overlook that stuff a lot. You know, you just kind of expect just whatever. You just deal with what you got. Because I think we all believe there's enough raw talent on the field to be better than they are. But I believe it is like 8, 9, 10 scholarship seniors on the roster. The hell is that? Where is everybody?
That's a low number.
Out of those 10, who's like
hurt?
Well, who even contributes? There's, I mean, I'm trying to pull it up here. Guys that have, let me see these scholarships. Now you have more than, so here's the scholarship seniors. You got one, Drew Brown. And these are guys that arrived as scholarship players. So I'm not counting the people that have been put on scholarship. Okay. Right. So Drew Brown is 1, Chris Jones is 2, Bose Joseph is 3, Kalu is 4, Neville is 5, AJ Natter is 6, Marcus Newby is 7, DeMorney Pearsonell is 8, Adam Taylor is 9, Kyron Williams is 10. out of all of those names, they're pretty much all hurt or not contributing.
Two are contributing in Brown and DPE. Neville's a break in case of emergency today.
Right. Well, so you basically have, out of people that are actually contributing on the field and that aren't hurt, you basically have DPE and Drew Brown out of your entire senior class. That's tough, man. That is not an easy thing to deal with if you're a coach. Well, where's the leadership? They're all hurt.
Well,
or they transferred.
Let's get to that right now, because you've made a move due to results on the field, and the leadership was not what you wanted from the chancellor or the president. They made that move. The ball is in your court now as a Nebraska football coach, as a staff, as a group of players. Let's talk leadership. What have we heard about this football team from Riley? He loves them. He's going to say that, but I believe him, that he really likes this team. And he didn't imagine 1-2. He didn't imagine 21-17. He didn't imagine 42-14 at half. And they can do something about it as a team, as a staff, as a head coach. Because that's where the conversation is shifting, okay? Your boss is out. Your protection's gone. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And right now, it's up to the 105-plus, if they love this man, to rally around. There's a number to hit, right? That is also part of this conversation. You've been put on notice. Now, how do you respond to that notice? And what can you go get? How can your team perform? And it's in their control. Now, you've outlined the weight on the shoulders while walking uphill to hit that number.
Yeah, it's a look. We know that. And we know that this firing was about football.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other sports was a contributing factor.
Yeah.
But we know it's about football.
Right.
Right. It's about, that's exactly what it's about. And I think Brandon put it perfectly. Brandon Vogel put it perfectly in a column where he said they can win their way out of it.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. It's like, yeah, cards are totally stacked against this staff. There's no question about that. No question. But what AD is going to walk in if Riley somehow reels off 8-4, 9-3? Right? They're going to be like, cool, keep it up, dude.
No,
absolutely. You know, like, congratulations. This is great.
You can prove yourself here.
Yeah.
And the other part of this thing, too, is Nebraska is not only able to get to 7, 8, or 9, but they have opportunities against the right teams. You can, you won't maybe forgive the Northern Illinois loss if you're a Nebraska fan, and it'll be really hard to forget it, but you can put some whiteout on it if you get one of the big dogs. If you beat Wisconsin for the first time since the ugly uniform game. If you knock off Ohio State, I have not taken any drugs this morning, so I know that the Ohio State Penn State conversation is way, way, way out there. But you still have that chance to go do it.
Yeah, dude, it happens.
You have some big game hunting opportunities. Now, the other side of this, based on last week's performance and based on the first half of the Oregon game, did you ever think in your life, once Rutgers joined the Big Ten, that you'd be freaking out about Rutgers coming to town for homecoming?
Yeah, well,
I mean, that is your stark reality. That's the other side of this, is between 7 of your 22 starters injured and your turnover problems and your ineffectiveness running the football and the pressure and stress now on this staff and team, here comes Rutgers. And you don't know what to think. You should drill them by 21. You should at least cover the number for Vegas. Do you have enough confidence to go out there and try and throw a pass? or make a block on third and eight if someone's screaming off the edge. That's the other mental component of this. How mentally strong are your coaches and how mentally strong are your players going to be? And they weren't very mentally strong at all when it came to calming nerves and going out and performing last week after the pick six. The air went out of the balloon as people held them waiting to release them. Okay? That's part of leadership. You've made a change in leadership. There are still leaders and adults on the football program's payroll. They have a chance to fix it and move forward. And that's all you can ask for is give me a chance to prove I belong.
Look, silver lining here might be that Riley gets more involved in the day-to-day with this program, because there are definite signs that he has not been. I don't know about the inner workings, but
there's been more delegation going on.
Yeah, right. And you get the sense that I-Course was pretty involved and I-Course wanted a lot of Riley FaceTime. You know? And I think that's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. Could be wrong, but it seems like they were pretty attached. Sean was pretty involved and Riley sort of leaned that way. Between I-Course and Billy Devaney and all this stuff. And the reason I say that is because you look at the communication issues just amongst his staff, it has been staggering the last 3 weeks.
On the offensive side of the ball, it has. Yeah. Diaco.
Right. I'm talking about his communication with his staff that we have on record. This is what we know. So Bob Diaco, a few weeks ago, dude literally did not know he was supposed to talk to the press. He did not know. Like, how does that happen? Your defensive coordinator, and then Mike shows up, and he's like, oh, that's my bad. I forgot to finish up with him.
I forgot to give him an answer.
Right. Meanwhile, Diaco is just getting skewered all over the state. That's not good, right? Like, okay, it's a mistake. It happens. Then you have the Reggie Davis situation where Riley's like, yeah, Trey Bryant's not going to play. And then a couple hours later, Reggie Davis is like, yeah, Trey Bryant's ready to go. It's like, well, your head coach already said he's not. Like, are you guys even talking? Apparently they weren't. And Riley was right. Trey Bryant didn't play. And then same with, you had a similar situation with Kavanaugh, with Cole Conrad. During the press conference, Mike Riley saying, yeah, it's an option to have Conrad move to center. Absolutely, that's an option, depending on the injury situation. Yeah. Then after practice, Mike Kavanaugh is like, he's like, no, there's no chance of that. He's not moving to right tackle. He's our center. Mm-hmm. Like, are you guys even? So that's all in 3 weeks where it seems pretty clear that Riley and his staff aren't talking. Like, they're not on the same page. They are not on the same page. That's obvious. Obvious. Why? I don't know. But that's the truth. And how does that trickle down to the rest of the team? Right? If you have your head coach that's just like, he's telling the media one thing and his staff another, or not talking to him at all, communication issues. And what was I-Course's biggest downfall?
Communication issues.
Did you talk about, right? The tone gets set at the top. Dude, that's got to get fixed.
Well,
that's got
to
get
absolutely
fixed.
It needs to get
alone,
fixed.
Let alone freaking blocking somebody.
Well, it needs to get
that
fixed.
That needs to happen too.
But can you change your stripes? I mean, it's been kind of a hands-off approach. And you asked the question earlier here as we got started this morning. Are you going to be more involved in the day-to-day? Are you going to be more hands-on with the offense? Are you going to demand more from your coaches? Are you going to demand more development with some of your younger guys? And I don't think he's going to put kids in harm's way by just yanking red shirts. I think he'll be very analytical about it, but he wants to win games, and now he has to win games.
Oh, yeah.
So
every single game is like a playoff.
Yeah, and so it comes down to, are you going to be the guy who fights to stay? And you're going to go out there and prep your guys the best you can and let the chips fall. That said, though, you can do more from your point of view, from your expertise, to ensure this offense is better. Before we get to our rewind segment, and we'll get into what's ailing the offense. Listen, Kranak, you're a tremendous talent with radio, but also with the No Huddle Hail Varsity. And you're pretty adamant this week, and I want to give you a couple minutes here before we take a quick break about, you know, what could help fix this offense. And you're not only a member of the Run the Ball Club, but I'm going to vote you for president because I'm right there with you. I think that is step one towards recovery offense is a mindset and attitude, and then an emphasis and follow through with being able to run. And it's not going to be an easy task against Rutgers, and it won't be an easy task against Rutgers without Trey Bryant, but it's in the best interest of your offense, your quarterback, and keeping him alive to just stick with it and find a way to grind out 3.5-4 carry.
Look.
Get nasty.
Yeah, dude, you take – look, this isn't pining for the 90s. I'm really sick of that crap, too. And I would like to talk about that later. Let's put that in the put that in the parking lot. Well, we're going to get into that whole 90s discussion in a little while. But if you take one – here's how important running the ball is. Sean Eichhorst would still be Nebraska's athletic director if Nebraska ran the ball against Northern Illinois. I'm not joking. You think he would have been fired if Nebraska piled up 200 yards?
No, because they go undefeated when they hit the 200-yard mark.
Right. Do you think that would have... Look, the evidence at this point is overwhelming. It's not so much run the ball as much as it is pass less. Because it doesn't work. Riley's 0-8 when throwing 40-plus times. Stop. Stop it. Like, there needs to be like a shot caller on Langsdorf and Riley. New rules. You get 20 passes a game. If you only have one pick, you get 10 more.
Use them wisely.
Yeah, that's it. Then you're done. The rest of it is running the ball. And the people are like, well, they can't run the ball. Well, why not? Because you got 16 dudes on scholarship playing offensive line that were highly touted, that were recruited by others, that are big dudes.
Why can't run the ball?
Why can't you run the ball?
Because they don't practice running the ball enough.
Okay, well then start practicing running the ball right. Because that display, more than any single component out of everything that we're all talking about, everything, all the components that go into leadership and coaching and programs and all that, the single component that would be the damn near a cure-all, be a physical offensive line. If Nebraska had that right now, Nebraska's 3-0. Nobody's lost their job. Tanner Lee doesn't have 7 picks. The defense has been protected, not defending as many plays. The trickle-down effects are ridiculous. And I don't even understand anybody who thinks otherwise. I don't understand anybody who's like, oh, it's not about running the ball. They just need to protect better. No. Don't be in. Look, against Northern Illinois, I know there was 47 pass attempts. There was actually 51 pass plays called. Mm-hmm. 51. 3 were sacks. One of them, Tanner Lee, scrambled, ran for a touchdown. 51 pass attempts? When he's getting drilled like that? How come the passing play gets such a benefit of the doubt compared to the running play in the minds of this offensive staff? You know what I'm saying? Well, we didn't get anything.
Because it's what they know. It's what they want to do.
Well, we didn't get anything on that run play, so let's just abandon it. So we're just going to go back to pass again. Well, you did notice that you threw an interception that led to a touchdown.
Twice.
Or you did notice that Tanner Lee just got completely planted into the turf, right? Like, and you notice that that's happened like 9 times today. Dude's getting his ass kicked. But yet you're okay with going back to that well. Come on, man. It's pretty simple.
Okay.
It's a lot more simple than we're giving it. We overanalyze the crap out of all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a nasty, dirty, legitimate offensive line that can run the ball, and with 16 dudes on scholarship highly touted, there's no reason why you can't. especially in this conference, especially in this geography. It's, I mean, come on. Fix that. Everything else takes care of itself.
That is Mark Kranak, Chris Schmidt, off and running on Saturday, the weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio. A rewind coming up with former Nebraska assistant, current co-D coordinator, Bill Bush of Rutgers. How about Madonna Therapy Plus? Don't let knee, hip, shoulder, or back strain put that life of yours on hold. Recover fast. Do so with Madonna Therapy Plus for your physical therapy needs. Skilled therapists using the most advanced technology. We'll get you results you need and get you back on the trail. The past 10 years, Madonna Therapy Plus has been voted Lincoln's number one choice for physical therapy. Three convenient locations in Lincoln for you. One in West Omaha, Madonna Therapy Plus, the answer you need. Get your life back now and do so with Madonna Therapy Plus. Log on, MadonnaTherapyPlus.org. Off and running, a quick timeout, a rewind. Next, Bill Bush joins us on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's catch up with a native Nebraskan and a former coach in Nebraska, now co-defensive coordinator at Rutgers and defensive backs coach Bill Bush with this. Coach, it's been a while since I've had a chance to say hi. How are you?
Doing great. Appreciate the phone call. Always good to talk to people back there in Nebraska. It's a great place. That's obviously where I'm from.
It is, and now at Rutgers in year two. And let's start with this year's club and some of the growth you've seen on the defensive side of the ball from year one to year two. Are you pretty pleased with the progress?
Well, numerically, we're a lot better, obviously. You know, we're playing, if you look at the numbers, we're playing a lot better. And you know, there was one score against Washington that was actually a special team score. So we played, you know, we felt we played decent against those guys, giving up 24 points. You know, they're obviously a very good football team and played well against Eastern Michigan, just not well enough to win the game. So that always falls on everybody. And then obviously last week we were a little bit of a mismatch for us and played well. The biggest thing that has been is just that our, you know, our kids have really bought into what we're trying to get done. Bought into Coach Ash as far as how we handle our day-to-day business, and it's shown a lot of improvement.
Tell me,
we're just constantly working at it, that's for sure.
Tell me a little bit about that culture and getting that buy-in year one and now in year two with Coach Ash's vision and your vision defensively.
Well, you know, like you said, you always want to, you know, recruit to a system a little bit, but that can be a little bit of a misnomer too. I mean, obviously, you just want to be able to have good football players, and it's coach's job for us to be able to adjust to them sometimes also. You don't want to just always be like, well, this is not what we want, but they can do this skill, but we don't do that. Well, we try to, what we've done, I felt, since we've got here, is to really be able to evaluate the players, what they do best, and put them in those spots. And so I think when the kids see that, they really buy into it because they know you're trying to do the best thing for them at all times. The thing that comes up the most year two that's so different from year one is just on how we can educate them better, on how they can prepare themselves better, how they watch film better, all the behind-the-scenes things. Because you know, the facts of the matter are, if you have decent talent, is that you'll lose more games than you win. And so we work really hard on the mental aspect of football and making sure that our guys really understand what's going on situational. So the guys have done a much better job in that area, in my opinion.
A few minutes here. Bill Bush with us, Hail Varsity Radio, co-defensive coordinator at Rutgers and defensive backs coaches. The Scarlet Knights come into Lincoln this Saturday. The last 10 years you've been an assistant in the Big Ten. What type of changes and performance growth have you seen in the conference? It's now regarded as likely the best conference in college football. 10 years ago, it was maybe one or two teams.
Well, I tell you, the thing that jumps out the most to us is that, you know, it used to be such a, use the term, kind of a neck roll league type of thing, where it was, you know, two backs and you know, downhill football and, you know 3 yards in a cloud of dust type of thing. And that doesn't exist near as much anymore. You see it out of every team, the ability to have a lot of really good skill players on offense and the ability to spread you out and the ability to have the quarterback be a dual threat guy. And so there are still some teams that may not base themselves out of that. They all have the ability to do that. And that's where I think the conference has changed the most. And I think it's just the simple fact is that the recruiting within the conference amongst every team has gotten better. And they've done a great job. If they don't have speed locally, they find a way to go get speed.
You mentioned the dual threat aspect where more and more colleges are using a spread, a tempo, a mobile quarterback, a handful of teams, and Nebraska's a pro-style team now under Coach Riley. But everybody is trying to get that dual threat guy that can run, extend plays, and, of course, throw the football. And have you seen progress defensively, not just with Rutgers, but globally, in an attempt to kind of sway the pendulum back? Because it's been a pretty high offensive-type game in college football the last several years. Is the defense going to eventually swing it back, or is it in a constant phase of adjustment for defenses against these type of quarterbacks?
Yeah, it'll be a constant phase of adjustment for you. Obviously, I mean, you just look at teams across the board. As like I said, I thought you see teams that play very good on defense. You know, the Alabamas and the teams that play very well, Clemson. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to play against both styles. And like I said, there's a lot of things to it. Is that if you want to play fast on offense and you want to go up tempo and you want to do all that, that's great. But you better move the ball and you better score because if you don't, it wears your defense out just to a nub. Because they're off the field for about a minute, and they're right back on it. So those are the things when you see the teams that are successful. It's like they're up tempo and they're moving the ball, getting first downs. You know, scoring obviously is the most important thing. But if they're moving the ball, it makes a big difference. The teams, there are a lot of teams that are spread teams. There's no magic. I mean, there's teams right now that they're not very good football teams, and that's what they run. So it still comes down to the guys in the uniform. Obviously, they can be able to get that done. But I do feel the defenses are starting to catch up, and the fact that they're just so used to, you know, they're, we haven't huddled in I don't know how long on defense, 12, 15 years, you know, you just boom, you get lined up, you go play. Everyone knows that it's going to be a quicker pace game. They understand how to get calls faster. A lot of times early on when things were going quick and speed and different things were happening, it was just simply the mental adjustment to how fast things were going. And so I think that keeps coming along. By defenses, the teams that also, you know, really bother you a lot are teams that go slow, then go fast. All of a sudden, they go tempo fast, and Washington did a very good job of that, to being just a normal pace team. And then at times, they'll jump into a speed tempo, and that's always a strain on the defense.
Bill Bush with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, you spent time as a GA at Nebraska from 90 to 93 under Coach Osborne, under Coach Darlington. What were you able to learn from those guys? And that was that 93 season, obviously a chance for a national championship. But I did quite a bit of research on just your time and where all you've been. And looking at that GA experience, what was it like for you?
The best experience of my life. Yeah, it really was. You know, a couple of things. First of all, you grew up your whole life. I just kind of made it a mission that at some point in time I wanted to work at Nebraska and coach at Nebraska. So I just went there as a volunteer, and I just hung around the office. I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't getting paid. I'd already had my master's degree, and I just kind of kept showing up. So they kind of thought that maybe I worked there, I guess. And so I'd make out a fake coaching uniform, and I'd drive to all the games, and I'd walk in with the team and find my way into the press box and do different things. And then Kevin Steele was the one, as the defensive coordinator at the time, was the one that just saw me in the office all the time and said, why don't you come with me? So I just started going with him and learning football. And then, they had a GA spot open up mid-semester, and luckily enough, I was in the office when it happened, so I got the spot, and so that was a really fortunate situation. And then from that time on, then George Darlington just took me under his wing. I mean, George is my biggest mentor in college football. Nobody has treated me better or has ever been that good of a father figure to me. He's just a completely selfless person, and he let me teach and learn everything. He allowed me to get up and teach the black shirts. He allowed me to signal coverages in during the games because that's just the way he was. So without George Darlington, I would never be in this profession. And then Coach Osborne, I said, to work for someone of that, when you just talk about a person, I mean, just as a person, how he led his life and how he led the team and his just core beliefs, just made you want to go to work and you know, work so hard for someone like that. And that's why they had such little turnover his entire career there, because he took such good care of his coaches, such good care of his players, and it was just such a great place to work. And I've always stayed close with Coach Osborne. We haven't spoken for, it's probably been about a year and a half now, but hopefully I get a chance to run into him when I'm back there, and hopefully I know I'll see George, that's for sure.
Bill Bush with us, Hail Varsity Radio. From a recruiting standpoint, that is something that you're pretty renowned for. And I look at Prince Amukamara that ended up at Nebraska. I look at Alex Smith that was at Utah for Urban Meyer. You've worked for Urban many times. You learned under Coach Steele and Coach Darlington. How have you absorbed their knowledge to kind of form your own way, so to speak, when it comes to recruiting? And how do you connect with kids? And is it different now than it was 15 years ago trying to get a kid to come to school?
Sure. The thing that stood out the most was is that in the recruiting aspect of it was obviously to be a good evaluator and learn exactly what you're looking for in your evaluation. That comes down to a lot of things, you know, competitive spirit, ability, academics. There's a lot of things you go through. So one thing to try to limit your wasted time as far as recruiting someone that has no chance academically, recruiting someone that character-wise is not what you're looking for, you want to bring into the program. So you always want to be so sharp on your wasted time. After that, I think the most important thing is that you have to get them to like you. They have to be able to want your phone call to come in. They want to have to want to respond to your text, and you have to be able to have a relationship with them. And that's the part that you just work so hard at, and you know, trying to find the, you know, some people use the term champion or somebody that's in the inner circle of, because you don't know who that is, whether it's an aunt, an uncle, stepdad, you know, somebody that's also very involved in the process. But to get a chance to get into the house, and then just get a chance to really get to know them. I think you have to build that relationship with them. Then you can start to sell the program more once you have a relationship with the young man that worked with, you know, with Prince, Eric Haig, you know, different players Cameron Meredith, different guys that are recruited there at Nebraska, Ricky Tenar, some of those guys, just getting a chance to get into their homes and getting a chance to know them got me started with them. And I learned that from all the great coaches. I learned that from the head coach, because the great head coaches I worked for, like Coach Osborne, always had time for a recruit. And it's the most important thing you do. I mean, don't kid yourself. There's nothing that's more important than recruiting. It's not just the exact ability that you bring in. It's how do they fit the program? How competitive are they? Do they do things right off the field? But in the end, every time a program doesn't go well and things go south, it's based off of one thing. It's based off of recruiting. And so that's the thing that, you know, always made me that I like to win. So that's what I enjoyed about recruiting. Try to recruit good players. That's what I always felt. So it made it kind of fun. And it's fun. I enjoy it. It's one of the most fun things I do in my job.
Bill Bush with us, co-defensive coordinator at Rutgers. Coach, as we wrap up, thoughts on Tanner Lee, on Nebraska and their passing attack as you come into Lincoln Saturday?
Sure. Just so impressed. I mean, I know a lot of people back there as far as just your general fans. I have a ton of friends in Lincoln. I'm back in Lincoln, you know, every summer, just seeing people there that I know. And so, I mean, they raved about him. People talked about him. People had seen him practice, said he was, you know, just did an unbelievable job. You see it on film with Tanner at that. What I see the most is that the ball really jumps off his hand. I mean, he can really spin it. The ball, and he has all the throws. Some guys don't have all the throws. He has every throw. And that's very hard to defend. I know that there's probably been some criticism. There's been some interceptions of talk and sometimes in protection and things. And a lot of times, like I said, the difference between winning and losing and success is such a fine, fine line. And I just feel that some of the things that haven't went well for him at times has been such a fine line of why it didn't go well. And so I'm so impressed with what they do offensively. And then they match it up with the receivers. I think it's going to be an extreme challenge. It's been an extreme challenge to everybody who's played them. They throw the ball down the field, and it'll be the same thing throughout the whole season. I thought they're a very, very gifted offense.
Coach, how did you deal with criticism that last season at Nebraska? Because the toxicity level's pretty high right now after last weekend for Nebraska.
It was a kick right in the gut. You know, like I said, I wanted my whole life to work in Nebraska. That's all I ever wanted. You know, I had opportunities when I was at Nebraska by other places to leave and have other jobs, and I would never even consider it, and things didn't end well. And so that was very, very hard for me personally to be able to have to deal with that. But like I said, you just keep going to work every day. You keep doing the things you have to do. It's so hard to say block it out, but it is true. And that's where, you know, you talk about recruiting being different from so long ago. Well, it's also much different, you know, in just the in fan support now, because everybody has a voice now. And social media, there's a lot of ways conversations. They're everywhere. That's just not Nebraska. They're, you know, they're at all spots. That place is a little bit more of a hotbed because of just, like, you know, like I talked to the team about it. So this is, it's a special, special place, and what that football team means to that state. I said, I don't know if there's any place that compares to that. You know, I coached at Wisconsin. I told the guys, I said, when I was at Wisconsin for 2 years, we didn't lose many games at all. We played really well. But if you did lose and the Packers won the next day, everything was okay still. Mm-hmm. And so there's a difference in Nebraska on how those things work. And so I feel for any coach that has to go through a negative time, because it falls on their family, it falls on everyone around them, and I also know how hard every coach works and what they do, and I have friends on that staff at Nebraska, and I know what great coaches are and what a great job they do.
Bill Bush, co-defensive coordinator, defensive backs coach at Rutgers, native Nebraskan, back in Lincoln with Rutgers. Coach, we'll do this again. Take care, and thanks for a few minutes today.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
To rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranek.
Big thanks to Bill Bush, the Rewind with Hail Varsity Radio, Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranek, Colton Stone, and Ethan producing the gang here this morning. Brandon Vogel in 10 minutes, Gary Sharp around 8:30. Don't forget the ESPN Saturday tailgate from Nebraska today around noon. And maybe you want to get out and enjoy one more day of sunshine. Wilderness Ridge, where you need to be. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. They got some hookups for you when it comes to game day. When it comes to Saturdays, can play 18 during the Nebraska football game. 2:30 to close at Wilderness Ridge for only $25. That includes cart rental. Wear that red and try and get a birdie. And also got some great game day specials going on when it comes to wine flights, red and white. Yeah, how about that? Every Saturday and Friday during football season, four pours for $24. Click the link, check it out, WildernessRidgeGolf.com, or dial up and go see him tonight after the game, 434-5106. Kranek, you wanted to spend a couple of minutes on the 90s. We'll carry it over to Vogel and Sharpie when it comes to that point of emphasis. And the president and chancellor said, why not try and recreate what happened in the 90s when it comes to that standard, that chase of excellence?
Well, the thing that's been bugging me is I see pretty regularly whenever we get in these times of tumult, you see responses like, you know, when's Nebraska going to finally decide to leave the 90s behind and move on? Like, when are you finally going to? And I don't understand where that perspective is even coming from, because it's not like with recent hires, Nebraska has somehow embraced the 90s.
Aside from the haircuts, it was a pretty good time.
Right. Or embraced the traditions. If anything, all that's happened is Nebraska has trampled on those things, right? But so what are people even talking about when they say, when are you going to leave the 90s behind and quit trying to chase that? It's like, dude, that's just been completely ignored. And look how successful it's been, right? Yep. Physical football has been completely left in the dust. Why? It doesn't work when you do that.
Get physical again. Brandon Vogel coming up hour two with Hail Varsity.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranek.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, hour two, weekend edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranek, Colton Stone, and Ethan producing. And we will get caught up with Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, shortly. We welcome in Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and Magazine, to kind of get thoughts on the week that was. And yes, Rutgers. I just got done FaceTiming Junior between the top of the hour and when we got this second hour rolling. And he has football practice in 15 minutes, and he asked me about the over-unders for today, so he's ready for tonight's game. Vogues, how locked in are you, sir? Good morning.
Well, good morning. It's nice to have a football game to focus on. You know, I felt for a moment there like maybe football got canceled, but nope, still got a game today. Rutgers in town, so it's nice to beat a Saturday. Let's put it that way. Yep.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. What do you make of the whole thing, Brandon? A lot has transpired over the last week. Just your general reaction to what went down, Sean Eichhorst being let go.
Well, I mean, surprised, I think, as with everyone else, but there wasn't much of one beyond that. I mean, we kind of know that he had put himself in a position where it was kind of a coin flip judgment call, you know, men's sport, really minus volleyball, which is sort of its own entity and just runs on its own anyway, hadn't had a ton of success under Eichhorst's tenure. So you were one of these kind of inciting incidents away from this thing happening. I didn't think Northern Illinois was going to be that one. Even though I knew it kind of brought us to the brink of that kind of choice. But they went ahead and made the move on a Thursday of all days. So I was surprised, but it kind of seemed like where things were trending.
Do you think there were just over time too many "damn it, Sean" kind of moments for Ronnie Green and Hank Bounds?
I think so. And, you know, it's in some ways it kind of reminds me, feels a little like how things are going on the football side specifically. Like, I think most people liked Eichhorst. You know, it was kind of the clearest moment of that Thursday press conference was when they said, you know, Sean couldn't have done a better job with everything else, meaning the academic side of it, some of the, you know, changes he's made, bringing in different departments, that sort of it. And it was just a really sobering moment, even though we always know this, to hear it spelled out so selectively. Like, yeah, you can do quote unquote as good a job as possible on everything else, but if the teams don't win, then that's what it comes down to. So they did spell it out pretty clearly.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Tremendous coverage this week from Hail Varsity on the Eichhorst dismissal, and oh yeah, football is today. So let's talk a little bit about football and specifically the offense. And you weren't worried about the offense. I mean, you were worried, but you weren't overly concerned about the offense based on, you know, you put up 35 and, you know, it could have been a couple more scores. You left points on the field against Oregon. Fast forward from week two to week three, and it was just a flat-out struggle to get any offense going and consistency going against Northern Illinois. And Mark and I kind of left off hour one talking about, you know, the topic of the 90s and the mentality that they had. And depending on how old you are, your kind of reaction to that glory era. I mean, you as a Nebraska fan, if you're in your early to mid-20s, you've heard about it and you appreciate it, but maybe you don't fall in line with, and that's okay to have a differing opinion with the emphasis on running the ball. That's how Nebraska's offense gets fixed and gets healthy again, in my opinion, to open up what they want to do throwing the ball. I don't know if it can get there, Vogues, and I wanted your take today on what you think will be likely for this game plan offensively. How does Nebraska try and go at Rutgers, knowing what they do defensively and what they do well against the run?
Yeah, I really don't know what they do schematically to kind of change things, but whatever it was against Northern Illinois, and if that changed based on Wilbon being in there, instead of Bryant, they've got to find a way to specifically run the ball on first down. You go back and look at that drive chart against Northern Illinois, and there are just, I think, 7 out of 16 first down runs were hit at the line or behind. Another 6 went for 3 yards or less. There's, this offense right now isn't operating efficiently enough to recover from those short yardage gains on first down. And through all of their time here, going back even the last 2 years, this was an offense that ran it much more often on first down than it did on all other downs. So that part of it's got to get, it has to be better today. And if it does, I think, you know, you might see Nebraska's offense look a little more like it did during parts of Oregon or even for most of Arkansas State. They just, for whatever reason last week, couldn't get it going. Maybe the reason was Trey Bryant wasn't available. He was really good in those first 2 games, but he's not going to be available today either. So they're going to have to scheme a way to get those yards that it's pretty clear to me this offense needs on those early downs.
Considering what we've seen from the offensive line right now, you're going to have 2 new starters today. Excuse me, Michael Decker and Brendan Hymus. Do you think collectively that can be a good thing for Nebraska to get some new bodies in there, maybe a spark of energy?
It could be. I mean, it's with the way last week went, I mean, I guess so the story there becomes, well, you played 2 new guys, you got some new blood, and you also add on top of that the offensive line sort of responded to how poorly they played last week. Like, Nebraska's offensive line has not looked good so far this year overall, but it's not as bad as it played against Northern Illinois, I don't think. So we'll find out. You know, it could also be you could have a repeat of last week where Farniok really looked like a young player in his second game. You could have that too. I mean, that's not off the table, but I think the offensive line is going to bounce back in this one. Just because last week was so shocking that it feels like a little bit of an outlier to me.
Is there, now, when you look at all the things Nebraska can do, all of them, every component of an offensive game plan, a defensive game plan, an overall program, it is that, right? It is just, like, if you could fix one thing, it would be fixing the offensive line, right?
Yeah, that's the biggest weakness at this point. And, you know, even if the offense was humming along and the defense was giving up 14 points a game, you'd still say, if someone said, okay, here's 5 points, you can strengthen one part of your already pretty good team, I think you'd always put them on the offensive line. So it comes at the most important part on the field, at least offensively. If you're not strong up there, if you're just average, you're going to have a hard time being better than just average overall.
Brendan Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, let's talk injuries. Neville, break in case of emergency. Bryant out. Farniok out. Conrad, leg injury. Stanley, neck injury, hoping he can go. Didn't practice all week. Newby out at outside linebacker. Fergie out at outside linebacker. Kalu out, and you know Chris Jones. Can we play the MASH theme song? Is that? Can we take requests this morning on that? Listen, what player are you most concerned about being out right now? Is it Bryant, or do you drift somewhere else?
It's probably still Bryant, and if Morgan can't go, that's obviously a problem as well. Although it might be sort of interesting if Nebraska was forced to diversify its targets a little bit. I'm not convinced it would be a totally good thing, but I'd be interested to see it. Let's put it that way. I mean, I think with the way that Bryant played in those first 2 games and what we saw last week, it's tough to choose anyone but him at this moment. Linebacker's not great either at the moment. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do there. I mean, this is a game when you look at that injury list, and there's a lot of things that say, hey, at least take Rutgers in the points at minimum here if you're not looking for the outright upset. I still think that Nebraska's going to kind of fight through this. I really do, and it's nothing more than the feeling. I can't give you any hard and fast reasons behind it, because there's a lot of hard and fast reasons where you think they might struggle, but this is kind of what football is. You got to find a way. In a lot of ways, you know, a season that's just sort of disappointing from a wins and loss perspective, a season that where you feel it got derailed by injuries is even worse, because then you're constantly talking about, oh, well, what might have been, look at all the injuries, which every team deals with. But when your team comes up snake eyes and it's their year to deal with a ton of them, it's really unsatisfying.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. You look at the snafu earlier this year, right at the beginning of the season with Bob Diaco and whether or not he was supposed to talk to the media. Look at Reggie Davis saying, yeah, Trey Bryant's ready to go. And Mike Riley saying, oh, he's not. Mike Kavanaugh saying, oh, no, we're not going to move Conrad to center. We're hours before that. Riley says that's on the table. What's going on with the communication among the staff?
It certainly feels like you have two hemispheres, offense and defense. So you look at the offense, you've got no changes from the initial staff. Defensively, you've got a new man in charge. He's got one of his guys in the secondary. You've got another guy who you brought in from Arizona. So it definitely does seem like it's not one voice, which you know, I think we know Diaco kind of pushed for after games. Showing up in some of the ways that you mentioned, is it a problem? I guess I don't know enough yet, but it's certainly not encouraging on that front.
Vogues, with Nebraska here, I want to ask you about poise. And do you think the coaches have been able to communicate and kind of calm the waters despite it being stormy with the man that hired them out now? Have they been able to keep fighting the good fight, for lack of a better phrase? Do you think they've been able to kind of focus in the kids this week, or is that too impossible to do with the climate here?
No, I don't think it's impossible to do, and I would say poise is one of the things that this group of coaches does best. So, you know, that's part of the reason why I think Nebraska will play pretty well today, just because their week-to-week approach, I don't think, had to change that much. I feel like the messaging probably stayed pretty much the same. And, you know, from a young athlete's perspective, I don't know how much those guys truly worry about sort of what's going on administratively. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I don't think ignoring that part of it in a week where you just got beat by Northern Illinois should be too difficult for these guys.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Are we overlooking how few, just in terms of numbers, how few scholarship seniors this staff is even dealing with? And go back to last year, same deal. You know, you talked about it in your research a while ago on recruiting, about the attrition rate under Bo Pelini was really bad, right? Like 34% of players just never played it down, never contributed, transferred, something like that. Are we maybe overlooking the fact that this year and last year, you have really small senior classes that don't have a lot of contributors?
Yeah, I think the second part's especially key there. So you might have some small classes, like, you know, senior classes tend to whittle down to kind of your core guys. But at Nebraska the last 2 years, you can even take that group and then cut it at least in half in terms of guys who are actually contributing and have a chance to be on field down to down leaders. I think we do probably overlook that a little bit. You know, I've mentioned this a number of times, but I still remember sort of talking with Aaron Babcock immediately after the Tennessee game last year. And you just start going through your head and being like, okay, well, that season's over. What's the roster look like? And it was kind of a yikes moment as we sat there and had a post-game beer and talked about the season ahead. So, but it does get lost as you have that conversation, and then you immediately fast forward into, okay, well, here's how it's going to look on the offensive line, et cetera, et cetera. I do think it's not the roster you would want going into sort of a potentially make or break third season. I don't know if I viewed it that way coming in, but we might be there now.
You know, and just for clarification purposes, last year Nebraska had, and I'm not counting the guys that were added to scholarship later, just the ones who came in on scholarship. Nebraska finished last year with 11 scholarship players. This year, the exact same, 11 scholarship players. So that's essentially your senior class has been cut in half by attrition 2 years in a row. I don't know. It does seem like a lot to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is. So then, you know, you're looking at sort of back-to-back what you'd call young rosters, I guess, based on that number alone. And you hope that, okay, every so often you're going to have one of those groups that's just small, but then you should get it back the next year if you've been able to retain people and address your need in the recruiting. So getting two of them in a row probably is pretty unique.
Vogues, to wind down here, who or what gives Nebraska that spark in momentum today to get that win? I know it's going to be a team effort. I know it's going to be all three phases that need to play well, obviously. But if you could circle one person or player, who gives them that extra little nudge?
Well, that's a good question. I think it'll come defensively. They've done a pretty good job, minus the Oregon game, which Oregon leads the country in explosive plays right now. They've done a good job of limiting that, which we know is sort of priority one for them. Continuing to give up even fewer of those plays and give up fewer points probably means getting a little more efficient. I think you'll see an aggressive defense. Which guy sort of leads the charge there? Not totally sure. Maybe it's a big Aaron Williams game. You know, he's really solid. And with the injuries they're looking at somewhere at other levels, they kind of need one of their veteran guys who's played a bunch of games to come out and have a really good one. So I'll go that way.
All right. I like that. Vogues, folks can find you at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Give us the rundown of what's happening on HailVarsity.com. And by the way, an incredible magazine. Tom Osborne on the cover of this week's issue, the what if covers with this week's issue of Hail Varsity, Coach Osborne in Colorado gear, man. That was cool.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the new issue just came out this week, should be on newsstands at this point, dealing with some of those great what if moments in Husker history, where if you just change maybe one thing or two things, what happens to the program for better and for worse. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty fun. We kind of reimagine the magazine throughout the eras. So if you haven't seen that yet, try and find one and give that a look. The web, you know, I've been really happy with our post game coverage. I feel like there's been a lot, and it's been dense and fair, and smart, which are always the things we kind of try to go into each game doing. So today's another opportunity to do that. So if you haven't checked us out online yet, make sure to pull up HailVarsity.com some point this evening.
You can subscribe 855-3-HUSKER, HailVarsity.com, / subscribe. Vogues, we'll talk to you soon, brother. Thanks for a few minutes.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
There he is, Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Go see Rick and your friends at Sauter-Hammond. Kickoff at 2:30. Plenty of time for you to get down to Sauter-Hammond, downtown Lincoln, what they've got going. 0% interest financing through 2020. A great extensive collection of both earth-mined and pure-grown diamonds. 1-carat diamonds available. Cranach, listen up. 1-carat diamonds available for only $99 down and $99 a month. Huh?
That sounds like a good deal, man.
That sounds like a great deal. And we need to bring Laura on here is what I'm saying. Go get a coffee or something. I'll tell her about the 0% interest financing and the 1-carat diamonds, $99 down, $99 a month. Sauter-Hammond voted best year after year. And you can see Rick and your friends at 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln, or out west in Grand Island. Can log on, as always, Sauter-Hammond. A quick timeout. The Iron Horse. Gary Sharp up next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Cranach.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7 1/2 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Gonna be hot today. Pace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Kratak, Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone, Ethan producing. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio. I'm getting scolded by a family friend who's incredible with insurance coverage about thinking Purdue can hang and handle this thing. Not necessarily win, but I've just cover the points, 10.5. They're getting them at home against Michigan. And he let me know to tell Carson that the over-under is 47 for Nebraska because Junior's trying to recover some of that paper route money. We welcome in the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, with us to talk all things Nebraska. Sharpie, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Jeez, Jeff Brohm has you believing. That's impressive for Jeff Brohm.
Well, right, because it's always Perdon't and Seabass is the best Boilermaker, right? I mean, four Boilermakers here. I don't know that they win that thing, but I think, you know, why not? I mean, Michigan's offense isn't that great. I'll get your advice on some of these entertainment purposes only decisions here in a bit. But I got to get your reaction to the week that has been in Nebraska with Eichhorst and the task at hand today with Rutgers. How are you feeling about Nebraska? How do you feel about the moves made this week?
Concern meter is up there because second straight week that there has been more chatter about off-the-field stuff, even though there's been plenty of chatter about what happened on Saturday. And then you factor in the long list of injuries and some new guys and new places that will be playing today. I still believe that Nebraska will find a way. I think as much as Nebraska struggled last week and the struggles were real, all of a sudden Rutgers has become the 85 Bears. That's not true. I like 28-13 today. Now, to the other part of what has happened here, and it's tough being a fan. Let's be honest, guys. I mean, we all have a connection to the University of Nebraska. You, me, Kranick, everybody has been worn out for about 15 years now. It never seems like it's just nice and simple, and the athletic department can just breathe, and it's easy being a fan. It always is something. But what happened on Thursday is not a surprise to me. I think this is, first of all, it has a little bit to do with 1-2, but it's a culmination of things, guys, over the last year, actions and words that led to the dismissal of Sean Eichhorst. I think people had finally gotten kind of sick and tired of Nebraska being in a negative light nationally for not just on-the-field results. And the last week was not a good look at all for how it was presented with Nebraska. And finally, the powers that be, and especially Hammer and Hank Bounds, who I'm a huge fan of, said, yeah, enough is enough. We have to move on. We have to make a change now. And so I was not surprised because Sean Eichhorst got out of his element in the last week where he was speaking more to the media, and I thought it was not good for him to speak after the game on Saturday because what did he tell us? Well, this is what leaders do. Well, you know, why do you have to tell us about your leadership?
Thank you.
I didn't like that. I thought he was out of his element. And then when Hank Bounds didn't say anything, I said, he gone. And I even said he'd be gone by the weekend. My partner in the mornings here in Omaha, David Benning, said, I think it'll be a couple weeks. I said, nope, he'll be gone by the weekend. And he was gone on Thursday. So Nebraska now can move forward. But what it creates is a really interesting atmosphere today in that stadium and a 64-year-old man who is the head coach of the University of Nebraska that will have so many people relying on him. And he's about to encounter something he has never had to deal with in his coaching career, whether it be in Canada or in the U.S.
Gary Sharp with this Hail Varsity Radio. Gary, whether it's Sean Eichhorst, whether it's the program hires, whether it's the offensive style, over the last 15 years, I think the theme that just bubbles up for me, and I want to get your take on it, is it just seems like Nebraska is swimming upstream way too often, right? Like, oh, let's bring in the West Coast offense. Yeah, great idea. Right? Let's get rid of Black Friday. Great idea. Hey, let's mess with the black shirt tradition. Like, do you know what I mean? Do you agree with that? That Nebraska just stop swimming upstream. It's not as hard as the players have been making it.
Exactly. Not just the players, but I think everybody.
And I mean the player, like the powers that be, not the football players, right?
Yeah, understood. Great point, Mark. And I think what happens in all of this, and it's not just a Sean Eichhorst was already behind the eight ball from the start because he didn't have the tool set to handle a guy who didn't have the tool set to deal with Sean Eichhorst when it was Sean Eichhorst against Bo Pelini. It seems like there are so many people that have different ideas of what Nebraska should be in the athletic department and on the football field. And you've got things going in a whole bunch of different directions where everybody, though, has the one common goal, and that is to make Nebraska competitive on the field and off the field. But somehow we're not able to get on the same page. Now, there's a line of powers that be that I think have impacted that, whether it be you or the guy that hired Sean Eichhorst, whether you were the guy that hired Mike Riley. I think there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and that's why I sent out a tweet on Thursday that whoever the new athletic director is, and it was not directed at what Sean Eichhorst just had to encounter in his very odd tenure as the AD here, the person that comes in as the athletic director will have to have full autonomy from the president, the chancellor, the board of regents, and Tom Osborne to come in and have his vision and be able to make on his own a statement on the football coach, the men's basketball coach, on his own, not coming in and saying, hey, you have to fire that guy. Let him come in, build a relationship, see if he's got the ability to help Mike Riley or Tim Miles, and if Tim Miles and Mike Riley can help him. I think that person who you're going to hire, first of all, you can't miss again. Nebraska can't take another step back. You got to get somebody that is from a winning culture, that has built championships, that has hired and fired coaches, started over and gotten to the top again, somebody that has a plan and doesn't deviate from it, that is a guy that you could walk into a cafe in Burwell and he's sitting there having coffee with the ranchers, or if he's a guy playing golf at the Lincoln Country Club, somebody that everybody can relate to, that is a communicator, but has a vision and doesn't deviate from it and lets all the coaches know that this is the vision to be a championship program on and off the field, and I can help you as long as you help me. We're in this together. We're not fighting against each other. And I think that's what we've run into over the last few athletic directors. Even Tom Osborne, when he was for a brief time as the athletic director. I mean, it's crazy that Nebraska's about ready to go after their fifth athletic director since 1999.
That is nuts. Sharpie, is there better fits? Are you more of a lean towards, you just laid out what needs to be on that resume and in that guy's heart or gal's heart. That said, when it comes to understanding Nebraska culture and a type of football, and stay with football for a second, does it have to be a guy that's been part of the program at Nebraska at some point, or do you spread out and go national? Because that's the next question. Do you go with a tie or a part of the family, or do you go national with this?
Well, we've already hindered ourselves, and I'm not saying, and you, Schmitty, on asking that question, but we got to find somebody that understands the Nebraska culture. I'm telling you, the Nebraska culture probably died on a Black Friday in 2001 in Colorado. We don't know what the Nebraska culture is. We know what a culture of being successful and being competitive on the playing field with our peers is. That's not really the Nebraska way. That's kind of the way of being successful in collegiate athletics. And who is out there that has had a track record of that? If they happen to have a tie to the University of Nebraska, great. If they don't, and they're the best fit, and they've got the best vision, and they're the person that you trust the most after you go through a thorough vetting process, then hire them, get them in here, turn the program over to them, and let them make decisions, and let them help the coaches that are here achieve what we all want, and that is to be successful. Sometimes I think we can't get out of our own way when we become very parochial and say, man, they got to have a Nebraska connection. No, they got to have a connection to the same vision that all the fans feel, and somebody that has the same passion for being successful that Nebraska fans want. I'm telling you, we almost have to protect how we are here or go back and say, hey, this isn't how we are in Nebraska. There's a lot of outsider perspective on what the Nebraska fan is.
Yeah.
We're not desperate. You know what? We just want success. We also are very realistic as fans that we're not going back to the 90s. But we just want to be competitive with our peers and represent Nebraska well. I think from the outside, there's a lot of people that don't know the Nebraska fan and know what's inside the state that are taking shots at delusional fans here. Not true. very passionate. You want somebody in the power chair in Lincoln to feel that same thing. And also, this is where Sean Eichhorst, I think, really got himself in trouble. There were a lot of times where you didn't think that Sean Eichhorst had Nebraska as the number one priority. Maybe he had the Big Ten's interest as the number one priority. Get out of here. You got to have Nebraska as the number one priority if you're in the power chair and you're running the athletic department.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. I believe, too, that whoever the new next athletic director is, and let's just assume it's not going to work out with Riley. Maybe it does. That'd be awesome if it did. All signs point to it won't. But if it does, great. I believe the next athletic director needs to understand that style, specifically a physical style, matters and needs to hire a coach that understands that. Do you agree with that?
I agree, and that's a proven track record in the Big Ten. Being physical, being running the football, works.
Right. And when you boil it down, you know, of all the kind of different elements, all the components that go into developing a program, building a program, the absence of that understanding is probably number one on the list of why Nebraska is where it's at.
I would not argue with you, and it goes back to something we were just talking about, Mark, is sometimes at Nebraska, we can't get out of our own way, and we overthink things. When it's very, very simple on a philosophy to be successful. And it's a great mystery. I'd love to see a study done on it, but we've been in this hamster wheel for 15 years trying to reinvent the wheel instead of the map is laid out. You just have to follow it and then use your extra juice and get to where you want to be. It's frustrating. I would say I've always said that being a fan of Nebraska men's basketball is one of the most frustrating things because they take you on a roller coaster and they tease you and it's been going on for years and years and years. Well, football is about to supplant that with what's gone on over the last 15 years.
Yeah. Gary Sharp with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Sharpie, you say 28-13, and a last thought here at right tackle and at center. Do those kids step up today? And I'm talking about Decker and Hymus.
Addition by subtraction. You're going to get two guys that will have a lot of bark today. Might be some miscues, but they'll have a lot of bark. And you will see those guys finishing downfield, unlike what we saw on Saturday. But I also think the offensive line is not as bad as they were on Saturday. And trust me, they were atrocious. I think they rebound today. It's still going to be a work in progress. But I think you'll see a better effort out of Nebraska. I just want to see guys celebrate winning plays. You know, they've got to have something good happen for them, some brief success to begin the game and try and build off of it. Because today, we've been through this 10 years ago, today will be a weird atmosphere in that stadium. Not every seat's going to be full, probably. It's very easy to get tickets today, or tough to give them away. But Nebraska needs something to go well right away. But a lot of new faces today. I think there'll be a little bit of juice. I still stick with 28-13. And don't start worrying about down the road how many wins Mike Riley needs. It's now turned into a week-by-week thing with this team. Just get to 2-2, then worry about Illinois trying to get to 3-2, and then we can talk about Wisconsin. Don't project down the road. Just find a way to get to 2-2 today.
Absolutely. Sharpie, we'll catch up with you later, bud. Thank you for your time today.
Hey. Thanks, guys. Great stuff.
Thank you. Appreciate it. There he is, Gary Sharp. That's absolutely the approach.
Yeah, well, it is. And just quit, you know, and quit. I know. Just quit swimming upstream, man. You know, like, That's the overall theme for Nebraska. Look, today you're starting a couple of guys on the offensive line after your worst offensive line performance maybe ever. I mean, that was just – it was so bad last week. Now you got two brand-new guys who have very little experience. You're going to have to keep it pretty simple, you know? And keeping it simple better include trying to establish a ground game.
Yep.
And just turn those dudes loose.
Well, and right? I mean, you got a good challenge. And again, Sharpie was right about making Rutgers the 85 Bears don't do that, but they are good against the run, and that's where you need to focus today for Nebraska. If you're going to go out tonight, I assume you will after the game, make sure you have that safe ride home. Do your family a favor. Do yourself a favor. Make plans to get home safe. If you get caught drinking and driving, you'll face a DWI. That could cost you up to $12,000 in fines and fees and jail time. Could take a life, could take yours. And you'd be required to install that airlock device if you do get a DWI. So please, when you're making plans tonight, get that sober ride home. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. A quick timeout. We'll wind down a Saturday edition of Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Wind it down a Saturday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Big one, Kranak. You get to make the trek down and take another one of your little ones to the game today. Carson's going to the game today as well. And you're introducing that next wave of youth to Nebraska football. And that is something that Sharpie hit on. I want to spend a couple of minutes on, man, is just the vibe today going into the stadium and the fan base. I mean, you've experienced that big game, right? You've gone for the big non-conference game, or when Ohio State gets here, or when Oklahoma would show up. I mean, you know, the big stage setting validation opportunities you've had for decades at Nebraska. Well, Rutgers comes in with that kind of in their wheelhouse. They have a chance to validate their program, the Ash regime. We spoke with Coach Bill Bush this week, and you heard him in the rewind in the 7 o'clock hour. I mean, he's coming back home to a place where he didn't survive back in 07. And it's just weird. You hope the Nebraska fan base will have the team's back today if things don't get off to a great start.
Yeah, and I think they will. You know, even last week when
I think they tried to will it forward, didn't they?
Yeah, and Nebraska fan, they'll continue to do that. Now, if you come out and you're down 28-0 to Rutgers at home after last week, then no, the fans aren't going to be very happy for obvious reasons. I don't think Nebraska fans' expectations are unreasonable. They want good football. You know, they want competitive, good football. That's why I was impressed with Hank Bounds and Ronnie Green this week. They just talked about being competitive, and that takes on all four. If you're that, if you're at least competitive, you got a chance every game.
Yeah, give yourself that chance, right?
Yeah. Nebraska fans don't expect a national title every year. They don't expect a conference title every year. You hope for it, but you don't expect it. You know it's not going to happen. You just want your team to be respectable, right? To stand for something, to have a decisive style, a way of going about things. And you just don't see that right now. You don't know. You have no idea what you're going to see from the team. You're sort of like, and especially offensively, you're just kind of like, it's every offensive play known to man is available to us, so we might call it. Like, what? What are you doing? Like, what are you trying to establish? What are you trying to do? It doesn't seem like chess, you know? It doesn't seem like it seems like every down is a new experience altogether. As opposed to like, hey, it's okay to run the ball on second and long, third and long, if you don't pick up the first down, and to punt. Because that is better than throwing into triple coverage. That is better than having your quarterback just crushed. And I'm shocked, by the way, that guy didn't get a concussion last week. Yeah. Then what?
Yeah.
Right? And so this, look, run the ball guy gets a lot of crap. But really, I think it's about pass the ball less, you know, and because if you don't, if Tanner Lee continues to get crushed like he is not going to last the season, period. He won't last the first half of Wisconsin if that keeps up.
You cannot put him in that position. And imagine that, by the way. Imagine it's Wisconsin, it's second quarter. You've dropped back 30 times already or 25 times already because we can't run the ball. Well, then play defense. Because if Tanner Lee goes out, do you want Patrick O'Brien's first ever snaps to be against Wisconsin?
No, it's a game-by-game season, right? We have a special guest on the line. As he is, it's a big game because he's making his way up from parts unknown. He wanted to give Run the Ball guy and Nebraska fan some support today. Klausburn is with us. Klausburn, got about 90 seconds here, brother. Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. currently on the job search, and I had an interview yesterday. I think you guys will be pretty pleased with the results, but I have to wait until my buddy Ronnie makes the call. Anyway, I'm really excited about the game. I like our chances. I think we'll improve, especially if we do run the ball a little bit more. I mean, we're taking on a team from New Jersey, so it can't be that hard. You know, they say New Jersey is the armpit of America, but usually a stick of right guard fixes the smell, so I don't like that comparison.
There you go, Klausburn. What are you looking to do before the game?
Well, I think I'll have a nice Arnold Palmer and a grilled cheese with a warm cup of tomato soup. And if you believe that, I got some oceanfront property in Kearney to sell you.
There we go. Kranak, a parting shot to Klausburn.
Man, I can't follow this guy up. Klausburn, you're the man. Should we pass the ball more today?
I am firmly in the camp of do whatever it takes to win. So if that means throwing it 100 times, and Lord, I hope it doesn't, but if it does, we better do it.
Klausburn, be good, partner.
Okay.
Moral support. There he is. Kranak, love you, brother. We'll talk next week.
All right, man.